Thank you for joining us on this webinar, Strong Pro Project webinar, Best Practices for Cultivating Emerging Leaders. We're going to start very shortly. We're just waiting for everybody to get in. We know how a lot of people get in right at 10. So we encourage you right now to go to your email if you haven't already done so and click on the screen share link. And with the screen share link, you will see our title slide for our webinar. If at any time there are any difficulties that you have, audio or otherwise, you can press 5 on your keypad on your phone, and we will come and assist you as best we can. Sometimes it's just a matter of restarting the screen share link. Thank you for that, and that's also throughout the webinar. So let's just keep going here. So my name is Damon Azali Rojas. I work with the Jamaat Rollins Group. We're one of the partners that helps the Strong Fill Project support all of you domestic violence leaders who are doing great work here in California. And we are doing this webinar as a part of the Maestro system. I don't know if people have used that before, but it allows us to break out into groups. So we see this also as a networking opportunity for you and your peers. Right now, all of you are mute, but later there will be a couple different sections where there will be small breakout discussions, and you'll be able to have those with other leaders. So we encourage you to follow up with those leaders later on as we go on. All of the slides here will be available for you on August the 12th, which is Monday, and actually there will also be a recording of the webinar. One thing to say in terms of the webinar, the audio will be recorded for the bigger sessions, and it will not be recorded for the smaller group sessions. So you can say whatever you would like to say in those sessions, and nobody else will hear it, except for those in your sessions. And finally, the evaluation, right at the end of your webinar, you will have an email in your email box that will have the contact information from all the presenters today, as well as an evaluation link. Please take that as soon as you get it. While it's there in front of you. And you also have, there's an attachment on there that gives you tips for engaging emerging leaders. So all that will be coming to you directly at the end of the webinar. In terms of using Maestro, there'll be two ways to communicate to the presenters or other folks. One is audio through the phone, and the other one is using the chat feature. And on this screen, you'll see the green arrows. The top left, there's a chat button, and when you press that, the middle right screen will pop up, and you can type into there. And the important thing to know is you can see where it says that green arrow, you need to choose who you want to send it to. So you can send it to anybody who's on the webinar, or you can also send it to everybody. There'll be a time where we'll ask you to chat to everybody, but that's a really important thing to know. And that red dot, circle, slash, just don't go there. It's bad. Just don't go there. Okay, so I'm going to introduce the presenters here. You're in very good hands. First, we have Emma Owens. Emma Owens is the Operation Manager and Program Analyst at the Center for Violence-Free Relationships in Placerville, California. Emma started volunteering at the center while in college. After becoming staff, Emma worked at the center and has evolved from an administrative counselor to implementing a paperless file system and helping drive the center into a performance management agency. So a very good example, which you'll hear her story about how she kind of moved up in terms of leadership. Our second presenter is Jill Zawiza. She's the Executive Director at Woman Inc., and Jill has been serving in the anti-domestic violence field for 15 years. She's worked in residential and administration programs focused on supporting survivors, also working with survivors of sexual assault and abuse for 10 years. Jill managed a batterers treatment program which she credits with rounding out her experience as an anti-violence advocate. So I want to welcome Jill as well. And then to round it out, Adriana Caldera, who's the director of the YWCA's Domestic Violence Department, the Support Network Program. She has over 7 years of experience working in the nonprofit sector, with 4 of those years focused on work in the domestic violence field. Adriana is an active member of the Santa Clara County Domestic Violence Advocacy Consortium. So those are the folks who are here, and I'm going to hand it off to Emma.
Hi, everyone. So we first just wanted to go over our objectives for today. And the first objective is to explore what emerging leaders are looking for in a DV career and how to connect them to the movement for the long term. So we're going to highlight some best practices around shared leadership models that create more space for emerging leaders to get to experience and develop the skills. And then we're going to identify skills and readiness benchmarks for emerging leaders to step into a more senior leadership position. So hopefully we'll meet all 3 of those objectives today. But first we wanted to give you all a chance to participate a little. So the next slide here, we're going to poll you all. We want to see where you guys are in your agency. So you're going to use the keypad on your telephone. So please press 1 if you're an executive director, a director of programs, or other director in your agency. Press 2 if you're a manager, a supervisor, or coordinator who oversees a staff team or advocates. And then press 3 if you're an advocate, a frontline worker, admin support that does not require formal supervision of other staff. And if you give us a second here, I can tell you all what our results are for the majority. So please, again, press 1, executive director, director of programs. 2, a manager, a supervisor, or a coordinator who supervises staff. And 3, if you're an advocate or a frontline worker or an admin support staff. Another few seconds here. And again, that's on your telephone keypad. Okay. So I wonder what we have going on here. I don't know where I land in this. I started as a 3 and maybe a 2 or a 1 now. And Damon's going to email me message me the results here in a second.
Passed here. So we have 34% was number 1. 29% in number 2, and 4% for number 3.
Cool. So mostly we have executive directors, program managers, and then we have a lot of supervisors, and then we have a small amount of frontline workers, admin support, and advocates. Great. So let's move on. Now we're kind of going to jump into talking about leadership concepts, just so we can kind of have some shared language among most of us, and we're going to do this really quickly so that we can kind of get to the meat of the webinar today. So first we're going to talk about what leadership actually is. And Adriana and Jill and I were luckily all part of the Leadership Development Program, and so we got this definition from there, and I really like this definition. Leadership is a process of engaging others to move forward an organizational or community agenda, rather than a position of authority. And I really like this because leadership isn't about what your role is in your agency. It's more about being able to move others towards a shared agenda or engage others towards something. And so you can do leadership wherever you are. You can do it in your agency. You can do it in your community. It doesn't matter. It's not about positional power. It's about being a leader. And I think this next slide really shows that in a visual format. And so on the left, you can see a positional leader, someone who holds a role in their agency, and they're responsible for supervising staff, for moving along the vision of the agency and the mission. And on the right, there is a situational leader. So this is someone who is stepping up out of the group and saying, you know, I'd really like to take this on or move this forward or helping move others along in kind of a shared vision. And I think something that's been really important for me is all the chances that I got to be a situational leader, they helped build me up so I could be a positional leader and practice the skills that I needed in order to be a positional leader. And I think now I'm going to pass it to Jill, and she's kind of going to explain heroic leadership. So the next slide is for Jill.
Hello. So as Emma mentioned, outlined in the last slide, there's sometimes leadership can be seen as lying with one person, or it can be more of a situational thing. So this slide goes to the difference between heroic leaders and shared leadership. And so it outlines how heroic leaders tend to make decisions in a vacuum and dictate the direction of the agency. So in this context, leadership is very much about a person. And sometimes that person is directing the agency without benefiting from expertise from other people within that agency who might not have that level of positional authority. Whereas shared leadership works toward building consensus within the agency and is a process of engaging everybody's voice. So it is more about a process of garnering input, discussing opinion, and it's less about one person in particular. Next.
So now we're going to, are you got it, Jill?
Sure. Okay. So Sorry, everybody. So we wanted to take a moment and just kind of talk about our stories of shared, of emerging leadership. And we can hand it on over to Emma.
Okay, so you all saw my professional picture, but this is more me in my natural habitat, and we wanted to give you guys a little bit more sense of our character. So this is how I take care of myself in my daily life. I love swimming in the lake, and this is me in Lake Natoma, probably after swimming a few miles with my silly cap and my funny outdoor swimming outfit. So now that you have a little more sense of me, I'll just jump into my leadership story. I came into the domestic violence field from women's studies. I was in college, the women's studies major, and my professor urged me to, you know, actually do something, work for a cause. And so I started volunteering at the center. They just happened to be the agency in my community. And after college, I became staff. And when I became staff, I realized I was really the only millennial on staff. I was I had the best kind of skills with figuring out different systems and delving into the computer and mining the data for any insight I could. And so once I started on as staff, you know, the directors of the different programs kept coming to me and asking me for a fresh set of eyes. Can you find me this? Can you find me that? And through finding them these answers, I started to figure out that we have a lot of systems that I couldn't understand why they were that way. And so I kept asking why, you know, trying to figure out things. And I think through that, I started stepping into more leadership roles, even as a program assistant and as an advocate. And that was where I kind of started developing these skills that now are so essential to what I do every day. But those are only possible because people would trust me, and my executive director and the other program directors really trusted me to mess around in their really important things and look at all their systems. And they weren't closed down to making changes. They were really open and wanting change. So after a year or so as a program assistant, the executive director came to me and offered me the role of client services coordinator. And I was a little worried at first because this meant I was going to start managing a lot of staff. I was newer to the agency than some of the other people, and it was just a big jump. But I learned a lot of really great things in that role, and I think I really accomplished what needed to be done in that role. One of the first things I learned is that managing staff and supervising people is a different skill set altogether, and I really struggled in the first few months, maybe the first 6 months, maybe more on that. And what I found this was because I'm 20 years younger than most of the staff that I was supervising, and they were looking for that heroic leader. The person before me was one of the founders at my organization, and she really filled that role of heroic leader. But I couldn't be that to those people. I wanted to build up a team around me. I didn't want to be the one making the decisions and you know, dictating everything. And so there was a little bit of adjustment period. But I think through that, we really found out that, you know, we can look at leadership a little differently. And I know I found my own version of leadership, not really necessarily what people's expectations of me as a leader were. I also got the really great chance to kind of overhaul our whole data system in the agency. So even though I was just managing the client services staff, we got a chance through an organizational strength grant through the Strongfield Project to change how we collect data. Not only change that we're how we count data, but really change how we measure our effectiveness through how we collect data. And this is where I really started to develop my expertise. And I think that's something that's really important as an emerging leader. You should find what you really love to do and develop that in yourself. And you know, learn as much as you can and figure it out. And it was my chances of shining in this arena that I really, really discovered that the domestic violence field is something that I want to do and that it's so important that we measure our effectiveness and figure out if what we're doing is right. So after a couple, almost 2 years in this position, you know, I had overhauled the whole agency's data system. I had changed a lot of the ways we were doing the program, and I had taken this program that over 20 years had evolved to all these different processes and taken it down just to the things that we had to be doing. You know, I took away all the things that had been implemented over the years but no longer made sense. And so I was starting to say, well, what's my role now here? You know, what else should I be doing? And finally, I came to my executive director, and I think this is another important part of my leadership story is me and my executive director have a really candid relationship. If I hadn't been brave enough to come to him and say, you know, I think we need some clinical expertise in the client services department, and I don't think I can provide that, and if he hadn't fostered such a kind of open environment, I wouldn't have been confident enough to come to him. So I had to admit to myself that my usefulness in this position had kind of been done. I had done what I had wanted to. And from that, I got the chance to take on a new role in my agency. And for our agency, it was a brand new role. And that's the operations manager and program analyst. And this new role is just perfect for me. I get to work in my strengths. I do the things I do best, and it kind of helped move our agency to sharing leadership a little more. Each person is really great at some things, and they should be doing those things, and let the other people who do things wonderful do the things they do well. So now I get to go into each program and work with the coordinator to make their program the very best and develop their ability to manage performance while evolving our ability to measure effectiveness and, you know, tell our story in the community in a different way. Also in this new role, I'm learning that I don't have to be afraid of not being nice. That's something I keep telling myself. Don't be afraid of not being nice. You know, be confident in my leadership skills and tackle our adaptive challenges and know that it's not about people's perception of me. It's just doing what's best for our agency and, most importantly, what's best for our clients. So just the main themes in my leadership story is really asking for what I want out of my career, being really blunt about you know, what I love to do, what I don't love to do, what I think we should be doing, have crazy ideas and talking about them. You know, coming on in the agency, I wouldn't have known that that we would even have the possibility of doing what we're doing with data, but because I kept talking about it and asking and making it known, then it really happened. So that's kind of the major themes, and now I'm going to pass it to Adriana and her silly picture.
Silicon Valley. And for my picture, I know in our leadership journeys, oftentimes we have to take a lot of risks, and so I wanted a picture that illustrated this. So this is myself in the Dominican Republic taking a risk in ziplining through the jungle. So a little about my story. My story is similar to Emma's in that throughout college, undergraduate, and my graduate education, I was really interested in the violence against women's movement, and I interned and worked for domestic violence organizations throughout that period in my life. And I eventually came to work at the Support Network for Battered Women in Sunnyvale, California. And I worked in the Fund Development Department as the agency grant manager. And at the time I came to work for the Support Network, there had been a revolving door of EDs and interim EDs and fund development directors and fund development staff. And this had left the agency without any definitive leadership. And this created a culture of mistrust among staff, of new staff members, and I can joke about it now, but at the time I came on board, staff had been taking bets as to how long I would last in my role. A few months later, it was announced to the Support Network staff and our agency that we would be merging with the YWCA Silicon Valley, and this caused complete panic amongst the staff. Questions started to arise like, you know, what's going to happen to us? What's our image going to be like in the community? Do we still have a job? And on April 1st, 2010, our agencies merged and we became the Domestic Violence Department of the YWCA Silicon Valley. And at the time of the merge, key leadership roles in the YWCA, such as the program directors and the CEO, they had been occupied by long-standing staff. The CEO had been in place for almost 15 years, and the director of the Rape Crisis Department had been working in the field for over 20 years. And from my perspective, the YWCA had been operating with a heroic leadership model, with leadership at the top of the organization kind of driving the vision for the agency and those leaders being ready to jump in and save whatever staff needed saving or whatever program needed saving, as opposed to developing individual leadership capacity amongst line staff and providing staff with additional growth opportunities. And immediately after the merge, the director of the Rape Crisis Department was appointed as the new director of the Domestic Violence Department. And we were absolutely thrilled because this was someone who had expertise and knowledge in victim services and could help us really develop the domestic violence program. And unfortunately, our director left the agency less than a year later, and we were again left with a void of leadership in our particular area. And it was at this point that my CEO and the chief operating officer approached me about stepping into the role of interim program director for the Domestic Violence Department. And I was completely petrified at the idea. I didn't have a whole lot of experience managing staff or creating department culture, or let alone building an entire department budget. And the shoes that I was being asked to step into appeared to be 10 miles wide. And I had lots of fears and doubts about stepping into the role of a heroic leader. And could I even be that type of leader? Did I want to be that type of leader? And after having conversations with trusted friends and family and coworkers, I decided to embark on this leadership journey, and I accepted this new role. And when I moved into this role, I didn't have a mentor in the domestic violence field that I can turn to. And at that time, my network didn't expand to DV staff at neighboring agencies. And I was facing new challenges that I had never faced before, such as staffing issues and learning to manage up. And I was fortunate enough to find mentors in my fellow program directors within the agency, and they acted as a sounding board for me and taught me how to read budgets and how to maintain a healthy work-life balance. And it was at this point in my leadership journey when I was fortunate enough to be accepted into the Strongfield Project Leadership Development Program. And through this program, I was able to look at different types of leadership models, look at theory of change, and look at strengths-based approach to leadership. And I was able to try on new ideas and find what works best, not only for myself, but for my fellow staff members and for our program. And three major themes emerged during this piece while I was trying to create my own professional development plan. The first was finding balance in this new leadership role. I could have easily worked 24/7 and never felt like I was on top of my work. And to achieve this end, I asked key staff in my agency to be accountability partners for me to help me to be able to maintain a healthy work-life balance. I limited myself to working only till 6 p.m. on weekdays, 4 hours on the weekends, and to try to leave one weekend a month completely free for self-care. And I still haven't perfected it, but I'm working on it, and I have much stronger personal boundaries than I did before. And the second theme that came up was this desire to move away from a heroic style of leadership. Within the Domestic Violence Department, we've been able to move more towards a shared leadership model by creating a domestic violence management team. And at management team meetings, we're able to discuss department-wide issues in a safe and secure space. And so the management team is able to facilitate larger discussions with the entire department. including conversations around vision for the department, programmatic growth, department and agency culture, and goal setting. And this also provides staff the opportunity to bring forth suggestions and ideas and provide additional input as necessary. And finally, after going through the exercise of creating a professional development plan, I immediately wanted to find a way to bring that process back to staff. And in order to achieve this, we revamped our annual staff reviews to include a section where staff could outline personal and professional goals for the upcoming fiscal year. And although we can't afford to pay for every training or certificate program that a staff identifies that they want to participate in, we can encourage them to pursue efforts that will create additional leadership opportunities and develop their own personal talents and strengths. And I never expected to be moved into a key leadership position in the way that I did, but I am extremely grateful for the lessons that it has taught me and the opportunities for growth that it has provided for me as well as for the rest of the domestic violence department. And with that, I'm going to pass it over to Jill.
Okay. So I think that you'll find that there are a lot of common threads between Emma, Adriana, and my stories. But I guess first I should talk about this goofy picture. Unfortunately, it's not showing me being athletic or risk-taking risks like Emma and Adriana, but it does. I am doing something I love where we were out on a little road trip, wine tasting here and there, and just having fun, being goofy. And it, to me, is just kind of a theme that's held throughout my leadership journey. So I, too, started as a volunteer working in the field. I was a women's studies major, and as part of my practicum, I worked with a domestic violence and sexual assault agency. And I held a lot of different roles and started out, you know, as a volunteer and was a client advocate, eventually was a shelter manager, the batterer's treatment program manager, and eventually I moved into a director position and was the crisis response intervention director in charge of all the 24-hour programs. And that was a really kind of a crazy way to develop my career. I mean, I held a lot of different positions, and it was really great, and it's offered me a very varied, experience, wealth of experience to be able to draw on to this day. And you know, what I struggled with at the time was wanting to have my input be heard and validated. I had a lot of different opinions that were applicable to the decisions that were being made around me, but I didn't always feel confident. I wasn't holding a role of positional authority. I thought that my input probably wouldn't be taken seriously or really considered. And I also struggled, you know, with the thought of moving into positional authority. I thought I might have to be kind of buttoned down and always serious all the time. And that just didn't interest me at all. I mean, as a teacher, I'm a little bit of a ball, and I like to have fun. And I have found working in this field very joyous and has fed my soul, and I didn't want to give that up. And I guess I thought, well, if you get into a role of positional power, you're kind of going to have to. So that held me back a little bit. As time progressed, you know, I did eventually step into roles with more positional authority, and I really relished that opportunity. As I mentioned, you know, I had worked at agencies that really embraced a hierarchy, who had EDs who did function within that kind of heroic leadership model. And that never appealed to me. But when I stepped into the role as a director of programs, I was really happy because I was able to put to use all of the experience I had with programming. And finally, I felt like, oh, wow, you know, my experience is really being utilized here, and it's feeling really good to me. And I'm able to get into this role and be myself. And it's kind of like I finally had that permission to really bring all of myself and all of my experience to a role. and I really loved it. And I loved working with the team that I have. They're amazing. And along the way, I was accepted into the leadership leadership development program in cohort 2, which Adriana and Emma were a part of. And I felt so validated, and it was so great to sit around the room and help with other people doing similar work who shared. I identified some mentors who really encouraged me and gave me tips on how to develop my leadership and recognize all the ways in which I really was a leader and all the ways in which other people on my team were also leaders. And it didn't really matter if you were an ED or director of programs or a volunteer or an advocate. We all have space to be leaders, situational leaders, and to share that leadership. The great thing about holding a position, some positional authority, is that you can create structures that allow people to bring that aspect of their experience to the table. And when the opportunity arose for me to transition into the interim executive director role and then the executive director role, I felt ready to do so. You know, I had the support of the Strongfield program, but I also had the support of the team. And what I realized was we were moving closer and closer to that shared leadership model. And I thought, well, this is my chance. Like, we can really solidify this at this point, and we can create processes and policies and procedures that help us further implement and solidify the shared leadership model. So this is something that we've spent the last year or so really kind of fleshing out. And I can tell you, it's not always easy, but it's something that I've felt has really engaged the team, and it's really helped them all hone their leadership potential. They have a lot of opportunities to develop certain aspects of their leadership and their strengths. So it takes a lot of leaning. It's taken me a lot of leaning into my comfort from time to time, but I feel that it's, at least for us, the most effective way to run our agency is that shared leadership model. And it's definitely one of the aspects of my job that I love the most out of anything, is creating ways and helping work on a culture that is very shared, goes to consensus building, and it's very flexible and respectful. And I feel like finally I'm bringing my authentic self to this work, and that I'm able to, again, call on all the experience I've had, but also create a very, like I mentioned, a supportive culture in which people are able to add their input and kind of their personalities to it. And it's been a really great process for me. So that's my story. And Adriana is going to lead this section of the webinar.
Thanks, Jill. And so now we're going to move into the small group breakout sections. So a huge component of the Strongfield project is focused on building networks. So instead of you all just hearing us talk at you, we want to create a safe space for you all to interact with one another so you can talk to your fellow participants on this call. In a few moments, you're all going to be placed in groups of 3 to 4 to network with other domestic violence leaders and other Strongfield Project partners from across the state and discuss strategies to support emerging leaders. Your small group will have 7 minutes to talk, and we'll give you a 1-minute warning to wrap up your discussion. And as soon as we open the small groups, if you could all take about 15 seconds to introduce yourself. Your facilitator to help lead your discussion will be the group member whose first name is first alphabetically. So for all the A's, tag your it. And for the reporter to share out to the full group, that individual will be those whose name is last alphabetically. And the report will consist of a headline that captures the group discussion. So So the presenters will be moving around, listening in on groups from time to time, and this section is not going to be recorded, so we want to make sure that this is a safe space for you all to go ahead and be as candid as you want to be in your discussions. And finally, if for some reason you have a technical issue in the breakout, just press 5 on your telephone keypad to raise your hand, and someone will assist you shortly. So next slide. So here is the big headline question. How does your agency build opportunities for situational leadership? That's the one question we really want you to focus on. And then we have other sub-questions there for you guys for your discussion. So you should be in groups now. So go ahead and begin your introductions and choose one person from your group to be the group reporter when we reconvene. Enjoy. Hey, can everyone hear me? Welcome back, everyone. We're now all back together. So what I'd like to do is have the reporters, if they can share their group headlines, please press 1 to raise your hand, and we'll call on you to be able to share the highlights from your group discussion.
Please give us your comment.
Okay. So this is Rachel from Ventura County. In our group, we only have 3 individuals, and one individual stated that her agency was a little smaller than most agencies, and so as the director, when she's out, she's having to share the leadership with individuals, whether it's frontline staff, volunteering for it, or what have you, and it was just kind of a natural progression for their agency. And the other individual also shared that in her agency that they share what she called leader fullness, which is we're teaching our clients to be empowered and have a voice and develop these skills, but we also need to develop those within our staff and our volunteers. And it's just a culture that they have in their agency. And her and I both shared that in our teams, sometimes we have individuals that may not want to volunteer for certain activities or leadership roles. Whether it be presenting or heading up a team for an event. And as leaders, we'll sometimes volunteer them and kind of push them out there, letting them know that they may not feel that they're ready for this, but we believe that they are and that we would support them in this process.
Great. Thank you for sharing.
Paul is next.
Hi. So there's just 2 of us in our group, and I'll say our headline was both of us are fairly new in our positions, and kind of as far as leadership is concerned, moving away from the traditional hierarchy organizational chart structure to a more working together and giving having everyone participate in the consensus building and creating more of a partnership model versus the rigid hierarchy.
Great, thank you. I believe Jean is next.
Well, it was Susie and I that talked, and she's with the Family Justice Center Alliance in San Diego, and I'm executive director of One Safe Place in Shasta County. We're at very different points in our careers and in our leadership positions. So we more just shared where we were in our organizations, and we had a good discussion, but I'm not sure we really answered any of the questions there. They just didn't seem to fit.
That's okay, as long as we're starting to have a discussion with one another. I believe Nicole is next.
Well, a couple of the agencies in our group talked about utilizing information gained through the StrengthsFinders book and assessment tools to bring staff together and really identify what those staff strengths are rather than what any deficits might be. They also talked about giving line staff more responsibility and an opportunity to speak into things like weekly staff meeting agendas and having them take a more active role in the facilitation of committees. And trainings, especially like for the 40-hour training, giving them more of a leadership role in the development of those pieces.
Great, thank you. And I believe we have one more. Rodney, are you there?
I am here. Hi, Jill. Let's see, there were three people in our group. Two of us were EDs. One is a line staff person. One comment that was made was that I liked was that when a new staff person is hired, the ED tells them that 70% of their job description is there and they're responsible for coming up with the other 30%. So that gives them latitude to develop things that they're passionate about. Another was giving staff decision making for programming. And I guess the third is something that we do, and that's to have staff responsible for monthly trainings, both in terms of facilitating and or bringing in outside presenters.
Great. Thank you so much. Thank you, all of you, for sharing all of this. Just a few pieces, some themes that I've been hearing back. I know a lot of people talked about giving or creating new opportunities for staff to be able to take on, whether it's project-based or some sort of additional training. I was also hearing quite a bit as far as staff needing support to be able to grow and develop in some of these leadership capacities. And also hearing quite a bit as far as agencies and programs moving more towards a consensus decision-making. So thank you all for sharing that. Now we're going to move on to our next slide, and we have another question for you all. And the question is, how can the domestic violence field empower emerging leaders? So you're all going to be considering this question. You're going to be in the same small groups that you were just in. So we ask that the same individuals who were facilitators and reporters go ahead and continue those roles, and then reporters will ask you to share again after the 7-minute discussion. So go ahead and begin your discussions around this question, and we will provide you all with a 1-minute warning. Okay, welcome back, everyone. So let's see, now that you've come back from your million-dollar discussions on how the DV field can empower emerging leaders, if we can have the reporters go ahead and press 1 to raise your hand, and we will call on you to share. Okay, it looks like we have Sarah. Go ahead.
In the first round with the first question, I didn't hear anything except some strange noises, so we weren't able to share our input. And in the second session, I'm glad we're on, we just had the people were Paola, but Jennifer joined us at the very end, and there wasn't enough time for her to provide information. But my name is Sarah, and what we discussed in as far as empowering emergent leaders, I've actually been in the movement since 1989, and I'm an executive director for an agency currently, so I've been around to see a lot of movement. Paola, on the other hand, has been with an agency for 2 years, and she's at a case management, sort of a middle management level, and she has seen her agency go from a heroic a year ago with an ED who wanted to go ahead and help move the agency together with shared leadership. And what we actually talked about is, you know, I think that with the leader, as the years have passed by, there has been a recognition, especially by Blue Shield, the strong field is providing an opportunity to open up and help empower people to step into leadership roles, especially with the strong field project that was rolled out several years ago. Now, having said that, what we're finding about the founders of the movement is I'm not sure whether all of the programs are really you know, moving forward, moving away from that heroic hierarch model and really allowing their staff to take leadership positions or take on more of the supervising and managing of different programs. And Paola was sharing a lot of that information. And I just feel I can speak for the agency that I represent. We've been around for 34 years. And we started to see a change as we grew our programs because we have two different residential sites. We had to start sharing leadership. And there was also a concern about who was going to be able to take over, as the original ED was moving on. They, you know, the agency started to look at that on their own. But we've actually looked to some of our funders, and especially Blue Shield, to help foster that. And I think we're moving in the right direction. But I still have a concern that we need to do a lot more, a lot faster, to help with the leaders. And we currently have a program director in the current leadership program now. So I'm hoping that she'll be bringing back a lot of different ideas and directions, and I'm giving her a free hand to do that. But my concern is I don't know what's going on all over the state.
Well, thank you, Sarah. We really appreciate those comments. And just a reminder to let everybody know, it sounds like there's still some technical issues, but you can also use the chat feature if there's something that you want to share. We'll try to get those read aloud. If not, we'll be able to compile them and put them on the Strongfield Project website on Monday. And I believe, Sue, are you out there? You're next.
Hi, I'm Bibi, and I'm the reporter for our group. And we talked about developing leadership in your staff and frontline staff so that as they grow in their role, having the ability to fill leadership roles. Also, ensuring that someone is paired up, maybe a new staff paired up with an older staff as a mentor.
Great. Thank you so much, Sue, for sharing. I believe Rebecca is next.
Hi, yes. My name is Rebecca, and I'm the reporter for our committee and or our group. And we first discussed how the field does empower people to be in leadership roles, and that's really based on the empowerment model we have for our clients and how we when we're encouraging our clients through that empowerment model, we're actually being empowered as leaders ourselves, and so that kind of filters down. And then when we discussed about how founders of the movement can empower emerging leaders, I definitely agree with what the comments were earlier through Strongfield, how this is one way we're doing it right now through the leadership program. And then also, we talked about how oftentimes programs can be siloed. Me, for example, my office is within a shelter, and so sometimes it's hard to know what's going on in the greater movement when we're doing the daily grind, if you will. And so these networking opportunities are so valuable, and going to statewide meetings, et cetera, as well as community meetings. It's so important to network with the other leaders in locally as well as statewide and nationwide.
Great. Thank you for sharing that. Is Susie there?
Yes. I was in a group with Jean King from One Safe Place in Shasta County. We were discussing a lot of the same things that everyone else has mentioned from their groups, that the field in and of itself is just incredibly empowering because of the work we do and the way that we empower our clients and each other in the field. We're also always being faced with adversity, and so we always stick together and empower each other, which is great. And then something Jean and I discussed that I've also heard mention of is mentoring, something that the mentors can do to help empower all of the emerging leaders is very essential and can be done in many different ways that I've seen so far, either getting younger volunteers, even though it's hard, and really engaging with them and providing them with small leadership opportunities to help them grow and become empowered. Also, there's a lot of great mentoring opportunities online where you can connect with successful professionals in the field who are older and founders or have already retired and offer mentorship and advice and encouragement through those relationships. So it's definitely out there, but it's something that we should expand on and really work to mentor the emerging leaders, if, you know, from the founders and the executive directors and all of these successful people that have that advice to give and to share that will empower us.
Great. Thank you for sharing that. A wonderful resource for everybody on the call. Melissa, are you there?
Yes. So our group talked about how it's important to have discussions like we're doing today so that folks know the importance of everyone's role in leading the movement and feel empowered to take an active role in that. In terms of the second question about the founders of the movement, we talked a lot about how the founders need to create space and opportunity for new leaders to emerge, being creative and thinking outside of the box about how to create new opportunities to structure the organization, and then also thinking about how the founders can step back to allow emerging leaders the space to step forward.
Great. Thank you for sharing that. Sherry, you're next.
I'm here. I was in a group with one person, Liz. She's from an evaluation firm in Oakland, so we kind of got to talking a little bit more about some different aspects. But we basically talked about one thing we mentioned was what our own agencies were doing with the information and resources that we get, which is, again, providing all the training from the field that we can to our staff to emerging leaders that we may see, and that could be from, you know, taking on management roles for different projects. It could be coaching some of our emerging leaders that we see within our agency. And one thing that we discussed as far as how the founders of the movement can empower emerging leaders is possibly one thing that might be fun would be to offer inspirational speakers, seminars, fun things that might benefit those who just need that extra little push, but obviously their leadership qualities are seen. So that's kind of what our group of two discussed.
Great. Thank you for sharing. And I believe we have time for one more. Mary, are you there?
Yes. So there is a group of two of us. And the other person in my group pretty much mentioned, like, what others have already, like, echoing what others have said, like, those in leadership roles, you know, should, if they have the opportunity to empower those who are not and figure out, you know, their talents and focus on those to help move the movement. Hope that captures everything that she mentioned. And then also, for me, like, I think it's just, this question, how can the DV field empower emerging leaders? It's very, you know, each individual who's in this field should answer that and see what drives them to be involved in this work. And so, like, personally, like, just, like, really noticing that, you know, there's the anti-violence movement, but also including the intersections of, like, other forms of oppression, which, you know, is something that really drives me. And I think that's really important. And as far as, like, what the founders of the movement, I think it was Melissa who mentioned, like, them stepping back a little and really allowing the movement to expand and change, not change, but expand and be more inclusive of individuals who are affected by domestic violence.
Great. Thank you, Mary, for sharing. So I know there are still quite a few others who we haven't gotten to. I'm sorry, but we're, you know, with time constraints, we have to move on here. But thank you so much, and there will be more time at the end to be able to share some of your comments. So just some of the larger themes that I'm hearing here, a lot of individuals talked about mentorship, being able to perhaps partner younger staff with more seasoned staff in the field to be able to help them have a counterpart to be able to talk to for things that are coming up within the field. I'm hearing that there are still some challenges that are there, whether it's programs that are siloed or maybe don't have resources to some of the trainings and seminars that are occurring. And I heard a lot around, engaging the founders of the movement and as to whether or not we are really moving forward and are those leadership opportunities being developed and are new staff having the space created for them to be able to take on those new opportunities. So now I will go ahead and pass it over to Jill and Emma.
Okay. So as we mentioned at the very beginning of the webinar, we have a handout that outlines these tips, but I think that a lot of these actually came out through the course of the webinar, but these are some tips we came up with to help aid emerging leaders. So we really want to encourage everyone to talk about their career goals, and as someone in a positional leadership position, we can make some space for that. So Adriana mentioned that it's a part of their yearly evaluation process. That's a really great place to put it in. And this allows people in the agency to share their ambitions and their goals and thoughts about their future career. And we as agencies and as positional leaders can help them connect with ways to move forward in those goals. We advocate the use of coaching. So that's something that, we do this a lot with our clients, right? We don't necessarily give advice, but what's key is actively listening and kind of trusting that people have answers within themselves. And as a coach and as people who our managers or directors, we can help them kind of connect with those answers, those authentic answers within themselves. And we also find it incredibly important to find a personal professional balance. That's just across the board, I think, obviously. For you to be able to really connect with what you want to do in your career, you need to be in a good place personally to really get in touch with that, and vice versa. You're going to be much more, you're going to be better at whatever it is that you're doing if you're in a good place personally. So balancing that out and making sure that, we have to contain a lot of trauma in this work. So let's make sure that we're all committed to having some joy in our personal lives that falls completely outside of what we do at work. And then build development into your work. So, as Adriana mentioned, the career goals are a good way to do that. Certainly, if there's anything that interests you, like the Leadership Development Program is a great example of that. If that's of interest, going out and building that into your daily, workload, finding ways to go to conferences or trainings or even creating curriculum for that, whatever it is that you can do that is you build an intentional space into your workload, into your work plan to either develop your interests and then as someone in positional leadership to make sure that you're doing that for the team that you lead. Emma and Adriana, do you have anything to add to that?
I don't think I have any immediate things. Adriana?
No, I thought that was pretty good.
Okay.
Now I think we're going to give you all a chance to share kind of your biggest takeaways. And so the next slide's going to show us. This is your chance to kind of take what are the things that stuck with you today? Maybe it's something you talked about in your small group discussion. Maybe it's something you heard from one of us that really resonated. Or maybe it's something you're just kind of thinking about now that you want to share with a larger group. So please, if you are apprehensive about talking, you can use your chat feature to send it to Damon, and he'll forward it on to me. Or you could press 1 to raise your hand. So please, if you have something you want to talk about, please press 1 to raise your hand. I know when I was listening in on the small group discussions, I heard someone say it's hard to build up opportunities for situational leadership in times of turbulence in your organization, and that really resonated with me. So do you have to put your leadership development on hold for other people when you're in turbulence, or can you use that as an opportunity? And Sarah, I think you're first.
Well, mind, I'm not sure what I'm curious. On that last slide, it alluded to a handout, and I may have missed something. Was there a handout provided?
There will be a handout sent to you right when we get to the next slide, so before the end of the webinar.
All right. Thank you.
And Alma, I think you're next.
Hi. I think out of the tips to aid emerging leaders, I'll be so honest here. I never talked about or had a conversation with my staff about their career goals. So I think that's one of the things that I'm, on top of a lot of things that I'm taking out of this webinar, I think that's one of the things that I need to focus more and exploring with each individual's what is their career goals? What are they? How do they see themselves in, a year or 5 years from now? I've been focusing more on the coaching and finding a personal and professional balance, building development into, my professional. But I think that's what I'm taking out of this tips and really focusing on what their career goals are.
Great. Just the idea that how can you build them as a leader if you don't know where they want to go. So that's great. So the email was just sent to you all with the attachment in case you're furiously looking for it. So one of the chat comments was founders can create space for new voices, sharing time at the podium. Anyone else want to? Oh, we have June. June's willing to share.
Yes, hello, this is June, and I really like the takeaway around having staff become more responsible and giving them more opportunities for the leadership, and then also incorporating in their annual evaluations of how they can develop further looking forward for more opportunities for themselves, and we can open that up for them.
Great. There's a theme emerging. So Jennifer? Are you there, Jennifer? There you are. Sorry.
Can you hear me okay? So
yep,
I sent a chat about this as well, but on the previous slide, the bullet point number 4 really resonated with me about the life-work balance, and I kept hearing that as a theme. And I think it is so important to really model this for other staff and staff that we're mentoring maybe, because I think it also can help with retention and decreasing turnover in our staff, because this is such challenging work sometimes and keeping that life-work balance. So that was something that I was thinking about. And once we have, continue to promote leadership within our agencies, then keeping those leaders, involved in the work. And I think that life-work balance really helps with that.
That's just such a great point. How can we entice new leaders into the movement and emerging leaders to stay if we don't make it realistic for them, if we don't make it something they can do for a while? So we don't have anyone more raising your hands, and I wonder if just anyone has any questions, something that they're really considering and thinking about, and they want, me, Jill, Adriana, or anyone else to answer. Any questions? You can chat or press 1 to raise your hand. So I know me as an emerging leader, I always had a hard time connecting to the outside field, and I think the Strong Field Project is doing a great job of that. And we have Rachel. She has a question or a comment.
Just something that I'm reflecting on is I'm one of the emerging leaders or young leaders in the field, but my team is also very young, and so as I'm growing, how can I foster leadership when I'm looking for my own as well. So just putting it out there if anyone has any input.
Julia or Adriana, you have anything?
Well, my first thought was just, although, you know, I might be in a position of I'm in a leadership position, but I'm also developing my leadership along with the team. And I don't think that we'll ever fully develop our leadership capacities and capabilities. And I found just for me personally that the more emphasis and more intention I put into kind of discovering what people want to do, I'm kind of like, oh, yeah, wow. You know, I'm finding my joy in, like, helping develop people. And I'm connecting with potential ways that I can develop. So it's kind of this shared process. It's bringing new things to the table that I may not have even considered doing before. And every person is so different. You know, that building that human relationship to figure what's going to really resonate with a particular staff person, that can be so varied from the next, that you, when you put intention and time into helping develop others, you are developing yourself because you're learning kind of this new, like, dimension of development. So it's a lifelong goal.
Oh, so well put, Jill. So we have one more comment. We have two more comments, actually. It's easy to get caught up in the daily business of this work, but it's important to create that intentional space for development and to fulfill careers goals. This can only happen if positional leaders in our agencies open up the space. And then another one, our question is, going back to our agencies, what are some easy starting points for someone that wants to start utilizing shared leadership? And Jill or Adriana, you have a quick comment to that? Go ahead.
Oh, no, I'm just saying someone else should answer that. I already spoke up. I'm going to step back.
I think shared leadership is just start building teams, teams for anything, and then attacking things as a team. And you can come at it from a strengths point of view, but I know I'm not good at everything, and being able to admit that to the group and asking people to step up and fulfill parts that they're good at can start building the shared leadership kind of model. And someone had another answer to Rachel's question, and one suggestion would be being transparent about what she's learning in her own leadership journey with her other fellow emerging leaders. So being really blunt about and transparent about what you're learning and the struggles you're going through will help develop the people under you as well. And so we have a couple minutes left, and Adrian had a question or a comment. Adrian?
This would be a great opportunity for many of the site directors and case managers at Genesee to sit in and listen. And I just wanted to let you all know that I have an office full of case managers, mental health, our legal folks, and the site directors, and it's very informative, and this is my role at the organization to help develop these leaders, because they are leaders, and just every opportunity that I have to share the information and resources available is an opportunity for their growth. So I just wanted to share that all with you, and thank you.
Thanks, Adrian. I just love that visual, not only hearing your voice, but just a visual of your office packed with people all listening to this content is great. Okay, so now we're going to wrap it up. If we can go to the next slide. Thank you all for all of your input. That was great. So I just really want to sincerely thank all of you for participating on the webinar today. The discussions in the small groups were just so wonderful, and I heard some things that I'm mulling over myself right now, so that's great. And we really hope that you've learned something today that will help strengthen your leadership, your organization, and hopefully the movement. Get involved, start connecting, and maybe you made a networking connection today that you'll follow up with a phone call or an email. So Jill, Adriana, and I, our contact information was sent to you in an email. And so we're all available for follow-ups, and there's a link in that email with a contact info and an evaluation. So please fill out the evaluation. I'm an evaluation nerd, so we'd really appreciate your feedback and your input. It will only take about 5 minutes to fill out. And then the audio, the slides, and the handout tips to aid emerging leaders will be on the strongfieldproject.org website on Monday, August 12th. So please feel free to send that on to someone else if someone who couldn't attend and you wanted them to hear. And Jill and Adriana, do you have anything else? Just thank you all for attending so much.
Yeah, I just wanted to extend some gratitude and appreciation to everyone who's taking part in these conversations. And I think that it's just so valuable for us to carve out space and time to discuss, you know, moving toward shared leadership and just development. And I appreciate when people are willing and excited to do that. So thank you.
I would second that. It's not easy to have some of these conversations. So thank you to everybody that participated today.
So thank you all. And thank you, Jamont Rollins and Damon and our tech people behind the scenes. And I hope to see you all soon. Thank you all.